Hello, Buggy fans! The second semester is well underway. Visions of race day dance in our heads. It is so close, we can almost taste it. And so we are here to help get you up to the start line. Welcome to Season 6 of Shoot the Shit, or as we affectionately call it, Shoot the Six. We got more of what you know and love about this podcast on the way for you, talking to people from all throughout the history of sweepstakes, going to be bringing you the stories behind the moments and people who helped make this sport what it is. My name is Will Weiner. I am thrilled to be coming back and hosting for you for yet another season. So get ready. You're going to laugh. You're going to cry. You're going to have a great time. So join me as we shoot the shit. Ahoy, Buggy fans. Welcome back. We have been shooting and shitting and just flying through this season, and we have yet another delightful episode for all you fine folks out there. Today, we go inside the lead and the follow trucks, talking with the faculty at CMU who operate those motor vehicles, and I was shocked how much I learned with this one, just in terms of the technique and pressure and nuance and stress and secrets of running lead and follow truck and being such an integral part of race day, why it is the most coveted staff role of any race day volunteer position, and was just a really unique view at one of the key roles that makes race day roles roll or possible. I don't know. Not too clever tonight. Anyways, I think you will really enjoy this episode. So without further ado, let's get into it and shoot the shit.
I guess I can jump in. So I'm Holly Hippensteel. I am an associate vice president in the Division of Student Affairs at CMU, and I drive the lead truck and sometimes co-pilot in Joanna will drive. And I don't know, I've been doing it for a long time. I was trying to figure out how long it's been, and I haven't quite figured out exactly how long. So.
And I can go next. I'm Joanna Dickert. I'm the Associate Dean for Educational Experience Assessment and Director of the Core Competencies Initiative. And I actually report up both through the Division of Student Affairs and the Provost Division. I am the co-pilot in the lead truck. I've been doing it at least 10 years is what Holly and I were able to figure out yesterday, but we think it might even be a little longer, but we think this will be at least our 10th year.
And I can go next. My name is John Hannon. I serve as Associate Vice President for Community Life in Student Affairs. And I think if I'm tracking right, I've been driving the follow truck since 2010.
And I'm Brian Koval. I'm the Director of Student Support Resources and the House Fellow for West Wing. I've been at CMU since 2010, and I've helped with Race Day every year since then. But I've been John's co-pilot in the follow truck since Race Day 2018.
Awesome. Well, cool. Thank you very much for joining. You know, I think, right, the lead and the follow truck are things that you see every race day, but almost just, I think, from a lot of this spectator or participant experience, it's just kind of like, okay, that's there. It's automated, but right. It's a pretty big job and there's a lot to it. So I guess maybe as we start, just from your understanding, like what all does it entail being the driver of the lead truck, of the follow truck? What are you looking out for? What are you tasked with? And then also, what does it mean to be a co-pilot and what is that role?
Yeah, I guess I can start. I mean, really, we're part of the safety crew, you know, both lead and follow. And I think we were talking yesterday a little bit about truck culture. I think there's a little bit of a truck culture overall, and then also a little bit of a personality for both the lead truck and the follow truck. So I'll say in the lead truck, you know, we are looking out for what's ahead on the course and making sure that we're out in front of the first buggy. And a lot of times our biggest concerns are people who have no idea about buggy and sweepstakes, and they just happen to be in Chinle Park on race day. So people riding bikes, people running with AirPods in, people pushing strollers or with pets not on leashes. I mean, these are, or even just the random squirrel, right? Like those are kind of our nightmare scenarios. So I'm looking forward, but there's also been a dynamic that has, which we can talk about, that is newer, of people riding in the back of the truck. So we've always had like the head judge and, the folks from the committee in the back, from sweeps in the back of the truck, but the having actual passengers back there with an expectation of being able to see the race is a newer dynamic. So trying to balance both being out in front of the buggy and creating a safe path for buggies and allowing people to be able to see what's happening in the race is kind of an interesting balance. So that's me. And then the other thing I guess I would say is trying to clear the finish line. Like when we come up, the back hills are pretty easy for lead truck until we get to the finish line. And then depending on what race and how many people are out there, it can be a bit of a nightmare. So you hear lots of horns from the trucks around the finish line. And Joanna, I don't know if you want to talk about being co-pilot in lead, but.
Well, I can, because I think I'm the only one of the four of us who actually rides backwards for most of the sweepstakes. So I'm usually the person who is hanging out the passenger side window, because in addition to monitoring the safety ahead of us, I always try to make sure that I have eyes on the buggies behind us so that, again, from that safety perspective, making sure that if there's a spin out or if there's something we need to be monitoring, I can be tracking that and letting Holly know. And knowing too that Brian and John are behind and are going to see that as well. But sometimes we need to slow down or loop back around. Or so I think it kind of aligns with that idea of overall safety. It was one of the criteria, though, to become the co-pilot is that you had to be able to ride backwards for extended periods of time. So that's, I think, a special feature of the co-pilot. The other thing that I think we do a lot of, and both Holly and myself, and I'd be interested if this is true of the culture of the follow truck, is that I think we're often ambassadors for buggy too. So people see us sitting there before a heat'll start and they'll come up and be like, so what's going on here? And tell me a little bit about this. And then is this something you do every year? So I think
can I get in the back of the truck?
Yeah. Exactly. How do I get in the back of the truck? Exactly. And so I think we do a lot of chatting with, not just students, but parents and faculty and advisors or people that we know on campus who may not necessarily expect to see us in a giant truck on race day. So I think that that also is something special about the being in the lead truck that I actually really value. Like I love sweepstakes. The only ones I've missed have been the years where I've been on maternity leave. So in 20 years, I haven't missed a sweepstakes. And I think that's a part I really enjoy, is being able to be a little bit of that ambassador for all of the good work that has gone into sweepstakes over the years.
And from the follow truck perspective, I'd echo everything Joanna just said. I think that's a really important part of the role that Brian and I play in with the follow truck. The safety aspect for the follow truck is really significant. One of the things when people talk to me about sweepstakes and they say, oh, sweepstakes, it's so cute. There's people in those buggies going down the hills, and I'm like, this is a really significant operation, and with a sweepstakes community that is so dedicated and committed to safety, and I think our trucks are sort of emblematic of that whole system and mechanism that's in place to help ensure that everybody is as safe as they possibly can be. Specifically, you know, our role is to be a very visible signal behind the buggies, especially during the free roll, that something's going on. Because as Holly noted, it is not out of the ordinary for somebody to be on a bicycle, to come flying out of Schenley Park, ignore all the barricades. And so I think the follow truck helps alert people to there's something ahead that's going on that might be a little different than they usually see. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is in the event that there's like a spin out in the chute, or if there's a collision between two of the buggies and they have to stop, the follow truck has the safety chair in the back, as well as the head mechanics for each of the teams that are running in the heat. So we help ensure that we've got people on site who can very quickly respond to what happened and kind of assess what's going on for the buggies impacted, for the drivers or drivers, and you know, make sure that that we're attending to the situation, you know, kind of as promptly as we possibly can. So I think that's really sort of the paramount function of the follow truck. And then we do play a role at the end of each heat in sort of clearing the course as we back down Hill 2 and Hill 1, which Brian has a critical role in that process, and he can talk about. But really in sort of getting people off of the course so that the next heat can run on time. I don't know, Brian, what would you add to that?
No, I think you got that. I agree with everything you said, John. My role as the co-pilot in the follow truck is similar, but a little bit different than Joanna's. I mean, John's got a lot that he's managing while driving the truck, you know, staying on the road, keeping the right amount of distance between the last buggy and the follow truck, doing what he can to, you know, to be aware of what's going on around him. But I really try and be an extra set of eyes and ears, keeping an eye out for those pedestrians and people on bikes and people walking their dog. As we get down towards the chute, I'm trying to do what I can to keep an eye on you know, the hill coming out of the chute to see, like, can I get visual confirmation that the buggies in that heat are through the chute clean? Can I tell the, you know, from, you know, as soon as that, the earliest sense that there's a spin out or some sort of an issue in the chute, so I can let John know that, because that can be really hard to see from kind of being below the course coming up on that hill. And so trying to give John as much notice as I can about something that might look a little bit sticky or tricky. And then, supporting, you know, the teams if there is an issue, helping them, you know, assess what's going on, get their materials in and out of the back of the truck if they need to get someone out of the buggy. And then, yeah, when we get to the finish line, every heat I'm hopping out of the cab and getting in the way back of the truck to yell truck at people who want to walk behind a truck that's backing down Hill 1. And so when you see me on campus, you're welcome to yell truck across the cut. I'll hear you. but yeah, I mean, it's super important because we're also on that really tight timeline. And especially when there's weather or a delayed start, like, we need to reset for the next heat pretty efficiently. And so, that's the follow truck experience for me most of the day.
One more thing I'd add in terms of a function that I think all four of us play is just providing emotional support to some of the leaders of the sweepstakes when things are going sideways or south. So, like, a really specific example will be, like, when we're waiting down at the start line for the next heat and there might be a delay while the safety chair is trying to make a decision about weather. Because, you know, it's like starting to sprinkle a little bit and what's going to happen next. And sometimes in folks' passion for sweepstakes, they get a little ratcheted up. And so, like, the four of us try to provide, you know, support that we can to the, you know, students who are really making some really tough calls and decisions in relation to how they're going to respond to different circumstances that come up related to the heat. We don't always have the answers, but at least, you know, we can have their backs to the degree that that's needed.
Sometimes we're even just like literally a spot for them to talk, where I know in the lead truck, we've let folks in the back seat of the truck. So maybe like head judge and the advisor jump in the back seat of the truck, and Joanna and I will get out and shut the doors and just give them a chance to like have a conversation where nobody can hear them. I mean, one of the great advantages of being in the truck, in the cab of the truck, is that we can put the windows up and nobody can hear what we're saying. So that Joanna didn't mention, but the other qualification that she had to pass in order to be co-pilot is what happens in the truck stays in the truck. And we have a lot of, you have to have a good relationship, co-pilot driver. You got to be able to say just about anything to your between co-pilot and driver and have it stay in the truck. So that's another role that happens there. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess thinking of it, it's really the only place with any privacy on race day now, kind of thinking back on that. A little interested talking about that audition or whatever specifically. Like, obviously, you've all been doing this for a while, right? What drew you into it? Like, was it actually an audition, Joanna? Or like, how do you figure out these things? Because it is such a very specific job and kind of random skill set and all that.
So my experience has been is that the drivers get to choose their co-pilots. And I don't know how the drivers get chosen. And then, you know, Holly insisted that I be able to drive just in case I ever have to, or she's running late. And there was one year actually, only one year where she actually wasn't there. So I was the driver that year. But I don't think it was an audition per se. I don't know. Maybe there was an audition and I didn't know it.
Life was an audition, Joanna. Yeah. I mean, so I will say I used to be a timer at the finish line. So I've been at the university since, race day 1999 was probably my first sweepstakes. And I was always a timer. And then Marcia Gerwig was the lead driver back in the day. And I don't know exactly what year it was, but at some point, I think it was Jennifer Hightower, who said to me, I need you to co-pilot. And I think it was when she was advising, but maybe, I'm not sure. Anyway, so I started co-piloting with Marcia Gerwig, and similar to what Joanna experienced, Marcia was like, can you ride backwards without getting sick? And I was like, yes. And she's like, I'm probably going to swear. I'm telling a little too much about lead truck at this point. She's like, I'm going to swear. And I was like, great, me too. And she's like, whatever happens in the truck stays in the truck. I'm like, yes, I got it. And she said, at some point this weekend, you're going to have to drive the truck. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I thought I was co-pilot. And she's like, right. But if something happens to me, you have to be able to drive. So I sort of volunteered for co-pilot before I realized that potentially driving was a thing. But I, you know, watched Marcia and learned from her. And then at some point I drove. The nice thing about race day is that like we have prelims typically the earlier races, the earlier heats are slower. And so you can get a little bit of practice in at times that it's not as high pressure. So yeah. And then I kind of used the same methodology when I needed to drive. Marcia gave me a year heads up that she was going to be retiring from driving and that the next race day was going to be me. At the time I approached Monica Beebe, who worked here. She was in Fraternity and Sorority Life. And, I knew Monica would be okay with me swearing in the truck and that she felt comfortable riding backwards. And she also knew a lot of the students involved with sweeps, which is always great. And so she was my first co-pilot. And then when Monica left the university, I was like, Joanna has the right disposition to be able to do this job. So that's a little bit my experience.
Yeah. And then I'd say, I had, like Holly, I had been volunteering in a number of different capacities for sweepstakes, starting back in 1994. Had done it a bunch of different roles, and my predecessor in the follow truck was Denise Fazio, who's still here. She's chair of Faculty Senate, and she as well reached a point where she knew she was going to be retiring, and so Sweepstakes was kind of looking for, you know, who the next person to take on the role would be, I just, you know, put my hand up and said, you know, I think I got the right demeanor and disposition. We can talk about the role can be pretty stressful at particular times and particular points on the course. I think of myself as a pretty level-headed guy. So I said, I think I can do this effectively was selected to do so. My first co-pilot was Lucas Christian, who used to be here for a number of years. I'll give him a shout out because I know he listens to this podcast, so he'll be happy to hear that his name was invoked. When he left Carnegie Mellon to go to Northwestern, I asked Brian to do it. So I think, Brian, you can talk a little bit about some of the requirements for kind of being the co-pilot in the follow truck. You know, I think particularly as we think about, like, once each heat is done, you play a really critical role. So,
yeah, like I had said earlier, like, I've helped with buggy every race day since I started here. I've been the Hill 1, Hill 2 transition judge. I judged Hill 4, Hill 5 a couple times, and so was really, really familiar. It's one of my greatest professional honors to be asked to be in this role. I can't emphasize enough how special it felt for John to go to the bullpen and ask me to come in. It was an instant yes. Of course it was. I think a couple of things, you know, that are important in my role. There is a degree of physicality to it, and no one would ever describe me as athletic, but I'm very comfortable. I'm very comfortable getting in and out of the back of a truck. That's something that I've done in other avenues. But it's a lot. You know, you think about how many heats we run on a race day. And they don't send, like, the smallest rinky-dink trucks. Like, these are pretty tall situations. These are pretty sizable pickup trucks at this point. And so that's an important thing I'm bringing to the table. You know, helping John stay his usual even-keel self while managing race day. I think we've got a really good dynamic, you know, where we've been doing it enough years, we can kind of anticipate what the other person's going to do and what the course is going to, you know, potentially do. You got to be prepared for anything, but you kind of know where are those tricky spots. I'm deputized with staying in touch with the runners and other volunteers, making sure we're good on snacks and hot dogs and donuts. That's an important part of race day as well. Knowing John's hot dog order and having that ready to go at the right time in the day, super important. It's just a ton of fun, and it's cool to get to be a part of something special. This is a student showcase, right? Like, this is, it feels really special to be able to make their most, you know, one of their most important days of the year, you know, be the thing they want it to be. It's super special to be a part of that.
Yeah. I just want to say to you, Brian, I'm so glad that you talked about, like, being like that thrill of being like, oh my gosh, I could do this. Because for those of us that are on staff at the university, but who fell in love with this sport, right, this really unique thing, and are big fans of sweepstakes, to be able to play a role is just and what feels like a fairly prominent role, like, right, just is really, really special. And it's so great. I mean, I have to say, like, when we were approached about doing the podcast, I think all four of us were like, oh my gosh, like, we've reached a pinnacle of, like, sweepstakes something, right? Like, we're going to be on the podcast. So it's a big, big honor for us. We love doing it. You know, we wouldn't dream of giving it away lightly. Like, we take the responsibility really seriously, even though it can be really stressful. It's also, I think, one, I know for me, like, absolute highlight of the year. So
No, that is something I kind of am, and thank you for joining. We're very happy to have you. Yes, want to dig a little bit kind of into that stress side, because to me it seems like it'd be pretty terrifying, like having to drive with buggies relatively close to you. Obviously, you've been doing it for a while, but like, how nerve-wracking was it at first? Does it stay kind of nerve-wracking? Do you get in a rhythm, or like, what is the actual kind of mental, physical experience of like maintaining that drive in the moment?
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in on that one. It's absolutely just as stressful today as it was the first time I did it 15 years ago. And you know, it's mostly that, like with the follow truck, first and foremost, I want to make sure I don't hit anybody or hit any buggy. And that can be really stressful at the transitions between hills across the course. You know, like when we think of the hill one to hill two transition, the hill one pushers, you know, want to really do a good push, and then they want to see how hill two takes off after that. And so sometimes want to, stand right in the middle of the road. And it's hard for me to keep doing my job in terms of the truck staying with the buggies. It's that fact is especially stressful at hill two, right at the top of hill two, because, and I know that sweepstakes tells those hill two pushers to do their best to kind of push off and then like run into Schenley Park down the slope. But occasionally a pusher won't do that. And I've got to stop the truck really quickly so that I don't hit somebody. So I'm always nervous at the top of hill two. And that's especially stressful on like the second day of races, because there's a huge crowds at the top of hill two as well. So it's kind of a narrow window to get through there to begin with. And then, you know, the possibility that a pusher's going to just stop in the middle of the road after they've let go of the buggy. So that part's stressful. And then I would say we're always nervous in the, you know, in the turn into the chute, watching the buggies and hoping that nobody's going to spin out and hit a hay bale. The last part, it's stressful backing down hill two and hill one to get back to the start line before the next heat. I mean, on day one, it's eight minutes gun to gun. And, you know, with the slowest buggy usually taking about 3 minutes or so or more to get around the course, just making sure that I'm getting back into place, you know, before the next gun gets off is hard. Brian plays a key role in making sure, like while I'm backing down the hill, you know, because everybody is walking down the hill, so they don't see the truck. So he's, you know, kind of yelling toward people to kind of say, "Hey, truck's coming down the hill. Please move." So that part's a bit stressful as well.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was exceptionally nervous the first time I drove, but also probably at that point a little naive. I think the more time that has gone by and the more things that have happened, I probably get actually a little more anxious with each year before the race starts. And then usually like two or three heats in, you start to find your rhythm and you're in a good place. One of the things that's challenging is that the leadership changes and different like safety chairs or head judges have different expectations of how far they want you in front of the buggy, how much they want to be able to see. So I'll say for a lead truck, we have meetings before the race and we talk about things, but you don't really know until you get a couple heats in, like how comfortable are they? And so there's a like kind of a banging on the truck that will happen about like speed up. And one of the roles that Joanna plays is to give a little bit more room for the buggies. Trying to balance that people in the back can see where the buggies are on the course, but staying far enough in front that you're not making the drivers nervous is is a hard balance. And so it does take a little bit of getting into like, oh yeah, this is what this feels like. But when we go from women's heats to men's heats and the pace changes, that's stressful. Day two is always stressful because the pressure's on at that point, and people, you can just sort of feel the nervous energy, and you don't want to do anything that messes up the race, right? Like you want to just make sure that nothing, nothing you do impedes people being able to do this thing that they love and have put a lot of time and energy into. But I think every part of the course for me is stressful. The gun to gun time is hard. Like John said, it's early mornings, right? And so Joanna and I have a joke about how much coffee we drink in the morning. Like we need enough coffee to be on our A game, and then not so much that we need a restroom break before the break between women's and men's, because there's not enough time to run into the restroom. So we got to time our bathroom breaks and that kind of stuff. But the hill two, when we come over the top of hill two, we're trying to be able to let the head judge see the push off there. But obviously the buggies speed up quite a bit. There's also a part on the free roll where we often lose sight of the buggies a little bit, right? Because we're trying to stay far enough out in front, and you can't really anticipate how much people are going to accelerate in the free roll until you've seen the buggies run a couple of times. The drivers and their line and then how good the pusher is really affects all of that. And so you have to kind of understand the parts of the course where people do accelerate, and like which buggies tend to take which kinds of lines. Like we really pay attention to that. Some of the buggies, you know, some of the swearing that happens in the truck is, when we've got two teeny tiny little buggies that are all black racing at the same time, that's really hard for us because it's really easy to lose them. Some of the buggies that have reflective windshields, it's a little bit easier to like, right, see where they are behind you. So I think coming around the stop sign and into the flagging zone is an area where Joanna will be like, oh, speed up, here she is, like we have to speed up a little bit. And some of the teams switched where they flag and how they flag. I didn't have a heads up the first year that that happened. So we came around the stop sign to find a flagger standing on the opposite side of the road, like by the fountain, instead of on the sidewalk side. And I was like, what the hell are they doing? There's just things that you don't anticipate. The shoot is always stressful. We're going pretty fast at that point, and we need to be obviously way out in front so the drivers can take their line and not be worried about running into us. And people are leaning over hay bales, and there's always a kid or two that you're wondering, like, is that parent paying attention to that kid? And the hill three pushers stand kind of in the middle of the street because they're trying to watch the shoot, and we're coming through there at 30 miles an hour. And so, yeah, I think it's fun, but those 3 minutes are a little adrenaline rush every time.
Yeah. I think I had a sense of how fast race day is from being a spectator and being a course judge. I had no real sense of how fast those buggies are really hauling until I was in the follow truck. Like, it's really impressive, and it is quick. Like we're really moving. I think another stressful part for the follow truck is while we are parked at the start line and we're waiting for the heat to get started, we've got so many folks who need to hop in the truck. The folks from sweepstakes, the folks from the different teams, the mechanics, and some organizations are super good about getting their person in the back of the truck with a lot of time before the gun. And there are other organizations where we are like, this heat is starting. You need to get someone in this truck if you're going to have someone in this truck. And sometimes there's not and we want them to be able to do that safely and get buckled in and all the things they need to do. And that stresses me out. The students do not seem stressed out by this at all, but I.
Yeah. The finish line for me is probably where my heart rate goes through the roof, because we have folks jumping out at the finish, but then the winner of the drawing has to stay in the truck. So we are, while Holly's sort of making sure that she can get through the crowd without running over anybody, we're telling people, okay, you get out here. And similarly to Brian, like, This is your chance. Get out now or you're staying with us until we go all the way up. And then making sure that the alum or whoever the person is who's won the ride in the lead truck, they have to stay until we pull up. They're not allowed to jump out at the finish. Although I think we've had some years where despite my best mom voice, they just didn't listen.
And that getting used to, like, the people that have to jump out, you know, like head judge and stuff, they know they're going to jump out, but they always have a radio club member. And that is like their shadow. Right. And so we end up calling that person shadow. And so shadow doesn't always understand that they have to move quickly to jump out. And we've had some close calls with shadows. We've also had shadows think they were jumping out, but not make it in time. You know, we've had some falls. We've had to pull away and people have lost their footing a little bit in the back of the truck. And so that's definitely, I echo what Joanna said. That can be a rough time. Yeah.
We talked a bit about the nerves, but right. You also said you need to be comfortable with a lot of swearing in the cab or whatever. So I think you've got some of those scenarios, but like, what are the other things that kind of just drive you crazy and make you lose it in the middle of everything?
Yeah. I mean, I will say like the, we'll call them invested parties. People who are exceptionally invested in what's happening at race day. They want to approach the truck. They'll sometimes want to talk with either, like, they'll want to put a challenge in or talk about something that they think is not appropriate that's happening, or question something, or want to know what. And we are really neutral parties, right? And so we try to, sometimes we'll just put the windows up and pretend like we don't even see them. That can be interesting. You know, last minute changes to the schedule or like not getting updates about stuff can be stressful, extra stressful. If the gun to gun time changes significantly and we haven't gotten the update, but we learn it because we hear like 10, you know, Joanna will be like, that's a countdown. I'm like, oh my God. So like one of the roles Joanna plays is she asks me before every heat, like, are you in drive? Because we have
every
to reverse.
Time.
We reverse down the hill, right? And so we go in reverse and then we're there. And either I'm still in reverse or we just put it in park. And so when she hears the countdown start, she's like, are you in drive? And, you know, more than a couple of times, I'm not. And so that can be a swearing moment. Sometimes the people in the back of our truck are literally running up hill one as they're like 10, 9, and you see the head judge like running up the hill and you're like, okay, how's this gonna work? Yeah, people doing silly stuff on the side, or the same folks that you have to tell to get out of the way after everything.
When we have weather delays, I think that's always a moment for us where A, we have no information. B, we're not just going to drive around the course multiple times to dry it out. I think that's where we are truly neutral parties, but folks think that we're insiders or that we are just going to do whatever suggestion may come along and make that happen. It's not our call to make, but I think we get, I don't know about John and Brian, we get a lot of that when we're in, especially in those extended weather delays. We get a lot of helpful and some not so helpful suggestions.
Yeah, I'll pick up on, because I definitely was going to lift up one of the things that is just annoying is when the course is damp from an overnight rain, and like, especially some well-meaning alums will be like, coming up to the, why aren't you driving around the course? Why to dry it out? And I'm not a material science guy, but I don't think driving the truck around the course is going to dry off the road effectively. So I don't think that's how the physics on it works. But you know, I think, yeah, in those moments where things aren't going exactly as one would hope on a typical race day, folks do kind of look to the trucks to like as a point of contact for what's going on and what's being done to get things back on track. So
I think another example that's kind of in that same vein is when we do have like an accident in the shoot, or we do have something, you know, that happens, we always have a ton. Well, maybe not a ton. We always have some spectators who want to use that as an opportunity to get really close to an opposing team's buggy or take pictures or insert themselves into that situation. And John and I have definitely like played a role in like creating some space there for the folks who can actually help that student. I mean, you know, we're always concerned that, you know, in a case like that, someone's injured and we wouldn't want someone slowing down the response there. And if they're not, even if they're not injured, it's a super emotional moment. It's a difficult moment for that driver and for that team. And you know, so we've definitely played a role in trying to carve out some space there for that to just be as good of a situation as it can be. But, you know, we don't want looky-loos figuring out harness systems because there was an accident. That's weird.
The other thing I was going to say too is sometimes the like colorful commentary in the truck is about the race, right? Like we're also big fans of sweepstakes. And so especially Joanna, like she has a better view of things than I do. And she'll be like, oh my gosh, there was a pass, you know, or and we're like, nah, was that such and such team? You know, so we're like, we follow the races and we're into it. And we have what we think is like, who's performing well, or who we hope has a better year this year than they had last year, or like those types of things. So we also, you know, we are neutral as far as our role is concerned, but we're also like watching the races, and that's just for Joanna and I, right? Like we're not sharing that with people in the back. So, yeah.
One thing I'm curious about, is there any communication between the two trucks, or are you all kind of both in your independent things?
Yeah, that's a key role for the co-pilots. So I'll sometimes ask Brian to call Joanna, or Holly will have Joanna call Brian, just so we can understand what's going on. I think that's particularly important when that communication, when there is like a spin out, so that like the follow truck can indicate to the lead truck whether they should come back around the course, because we need additional assistance for whatever reason in making sure everything's safe until the cleared the scene in terms of what happened with the buggy. So those are times definitely that communication's key.
I guess another role we play is just transportation. That might sound silly, right? But if the advisor needs to get down to the chute and Joanna and I are already up at the finish line, we might get a call to say, you know, can you get Stacy down here? Can you, whatever. So we literally will play the transportation role in just getting people where they need to be on the course, or picking up extra people down at the chute. Or, you know, we've had, we needed to get sweepers down there because maybe there was a hay bale that was impacted and now there's like hay all over. And so we will grab a bunch of sweepers and drive them down to the chute. So, you know, we play that role as well, like support.
I think this has been a lot of really cool stuff just about, right, the broad philosophy and the generalized experience, but want to maybe get into some specific stories or anecdotes you may have of particularly memorable wild moments in the truck or anything like that that come to mind. Everybody's grinning.
I know Joanna has one. I don't know if she feels comfortable sharing.
I have a good one, but I have to protect the anonymity of the parties involved. So my funniest sweepstakes story was actually from the year that Holly was not there. So I was the driver, and we had to recruit some substitute co-pilots, some of whom are very well known in the buggy community. And on the Saturday of race weekend, we had one of those picture perfect like spring days. So no weather delays, the sun was shining, people were like milling around the course. So lots of buzz. We're sitting at the top. We had just pulled past the finish line and we're sitting there waiting for Brian and John to come down. And we both had our coffee and our breakfast hot dogs, and my co-pilot sticks her hand out the window and dumps the coffee right onto the course. And I had a moment where I thought, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. And then I'm like, what are you doing? We can't have that on the course. And this individual was like, oh my God, oh my God, runs over to the alumni tent, gets the tiny beverage napkins and starts mopping up the course. So that was probably one of the more memorable moments that unfortunately Holly was not there to share, because of course, if Holly had been the co-pilot, the coffee would have already been consumed and there would only have been an empty cup left. There wouldn't have been any to pour out the window.
I mean, I will say, I know I mentioned the like we've had some close calls at the finish line with people. You know, there's I'll protect anonymity. There's some well-known BAA folks that are often find themselves in the back of the truck. Sometimes those folks don't have just coffee in their morning coffee mugs. And so they make some questionable choices back there. Like they stand up thinking they're going to jump out of the truck. And so we have anticipated that and we'll just sort of hit the gas a little bit as they go to stand up and then they flop down back in the back of the truck and we pull off. So we have our little take a seat little move that we do for some of our alumni friends that try to get away with jumping out of the back of the truck. That's a fun one. You know, we enjoy it. I'm not sure how much they enjoy it, but I'm always nervous when we have VIPs ride in the back of the truck. Like Joanne and I were trying to figure out when that all started, because that has not always been a thing, like the culture of having people ride in the back of the truck. I mean, I know the auction is one thing, but even having, whether it's the president or the provost or like other VIPs in the back of the truck, we did find a picture from 2015 that is like Farnham and Scott Morey and all of us at the side of the truck after a race. So I think that was pretty early days of people like VIPs riding in the back.
Although I don't even know, Holly, if that was planned. I think that was a situation where Farnham, who was probably provost at the time, had just come over to chat and someone may have said, hey, do you want to get in? And the next thing Farnham's riding in the back of the truck. So I don't even know if that was formalized at the time or if it was just, hey, can we do this? And then over time, it's become something that's a little more formal and ends up on all the socials and then is part of the auction.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was more like a, hey, can we make this happen? Yeah, mm-hmm. Let's get in. So
one of the most startling things I encountered was one year during the men's heat. Coming up the hill, and it was at the hill 4-5 transition, and one of the hill 4 pusher completed the transition successfully, fell down, ripped his shorts, so his shorts came completely off, and unfortunately had decided to go commando that day, so was standing in the middle of the transition area, naked from the waist down. And I was like, oh my, should I do something here and stop the truck? But thankfully some lady ran over from the side of the road and took her coat off and wrapped it around him. It's like, you poor thing. And so got him successfully, off the course. That was an interesting one. I felt bad for that guy. I don't know, Brian, any good memories you've got?
Well, they're all good memories, John, but I don't remember anything like super, what I think is crazy is a really high bar. I don't know. Like you just experience a lot. I mean, maybe this is a good opportunity to talk though about like the robo buggy heats, because those are a very different kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And in the follow truck, there's a level of intensity there that is different from every other heat of race day. So I don't know if that makes sense, John. Do you want to get into that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, like, as you said, I mean, every team is intense.
Yes.
On race days, but the Robo Buggy team, it's like a whole other level. So, for those heats, actually, like, the Robo Buggy people have to be inside the follow truck, and they have the radio controller for the Robo Buggy, and they give very specific instructions about whether you're too close or too far from the buggy, so that they keep the like radio signal appropriate for it. But they, some years the teammates have been yelling at each other in the truck from the front seat to the back seat. And it's just every year, Brian and I are like cheering for them so hard in the hopes that RoboBuggy is going to make it all the way around the course. Yeah. I don't know what you'd add to that, Brian, but it is definitely like a whole nother level for Robo Buggy, and props to those people because they definitely work really hard on what they do and are so excited to be a part of the whole kind of program. So.
No, I wouldn't add a ton. I mean, it really involves two students getting in the cab of the truck. One of them sits in the front passenger seat. That's the person with the remote control. And then one of their teammates is actually sitting behind them, almost like they're in a bobsled with a laptop, pulling data and you know, in real time about like where they are on the course and information that I don't understand, but seems really important. So they're communicating with each other. They're communicating with John about his position on the course. I'm still trying my darndest to keep my eyes peeled for hazards and things that go on. We're just really pulling for them every year to have a really successful heat. And successful heat doesn't always mean like finishing the course, you know, necessarily. We've had years where they haven't quite made it, but they still felt really good about it. It's a hoot. It is just a very different kind of thing. It's really cool.
I was just going to say, I think Robo Buggy is just a quintessential example of how this sport has continued to evolve as the university has continued to evolve. So like sweepstakes is, you know, entirely, you know, it's rooted in the university's history and we can trace it back over time and its evolution. But I just love how we continue to sort of integrate the way that the university is changing and the way that our disciplinary foci are growing. Like, I just feel like it's so Carnegie Mellon that not only do we have conversations about materials that are used and different ways of designing the buggies so that they're more aerodynamic, but that our students are constantly coming up with these new ways of integrating what they're studying, you know, in the classroom or in their undergraduate research and building it into this longstanding university tradition. I love to see these different spins on buggy, including Robo Buggy, because I just think it really embodies the spirit of who we are as an institution and as something that students carry forward with them when they graduate.
Yeah, just really thinking now about some of the lines Robo Buggy will take, you know, talking about trying to anticipate lines and stuff like that. It really is hitting how difficult it can be. But no, they are, I don't know if there is anything, yeah, more quintessentially CMU than Robo Buggy. Like, it really checks every box. Cool. Yeah. Other specifics, just in terms of like anecdotes or memories or things that really stick out to you over the years.
I think one of the things that's tricky about answering that from the follow truck is that we are often very far behind some of the action. You know, John and I do have the radio on in the truck, listening to the broadcast. But there is also a delay there, and we're also trying to pay attention to other things. So it's super helpful for us to kind of have a sense, but we often entirely miss those like really awesome final, you know, final pushes and those leaps to grab the buggy at the very end of the heat. So we don't often see those things from where we are.
It's high drama. Like that weekend can be like a high drama weekend, depending on what's going on. And like I was saying before, I think sometimes the lead truck can be right in the middle of it. And so we do a lot of like nodding our heads and like listening to people, but it's not necessarily like our drama. So I would say anything that is played out as like the, you know, the head judge is doing, like making some determinations about things. And like, that's all happening around us, but we try not to be involved in it. So I do think that sometimes people assume we've got more information than we have, but we're really just like letting it play out. I mean, sometimes we're also the spot where like the advisor will jump in the backseat of the truck and be like, I'm just going to sit here for a little bit. Like they need a space where they can just be a human. And you know, different organizations might be giving them a hard time. Some alumni might be being difficult. Members of sweeps might be having drama with one another, or whatever. And so they just need like a place to be. And we just, I don't know, we just try to have fun, right? Like we're like, I think you need a breakfast hot dog to get through. We just try to keep things kind of light in the truck, right? Like let's put up the windows and enjoy our apple fritter and drink some more coffee. The buggy food is big time. Like we're really into that in the lead truck, at least.
The hot dogs and donuts.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big part of it.
I don't know if I've heard... I feel like there hasn't been enough mention of breakfast hot dogs on this podcast, so I'm glad we're getting our quota here finally. One thing you mentioned at the start, you said you were talking about truck culture, and I think obviously kind of just painted a picture of that over the past hour. But I guess maybe succinctly, if you want to talk about what exactly you meant by that or what it means to you.
Yeah, for me, I would say truck culture is like there's lingo that is buggy lingo and that you know, is part of the truck culture. And there's the sort of norms of like when you get there and we do a ride around at least once around the course before everything gets started. Sometimes we do a couple times. Knowing the people, so meeting like who are the new leaders and understanding who the folks are. Knowing like Will, like who you are, right? Like the sort of voice of buggy and like those types of things. So it's being ingrained in overall buggy culture, but there's also just that like being on the course piece that I don't think a lot of staff and faculty get the experience of that feels like unique to truck culture. And I guess I've become aware of that because recently we had a new advisor, right? So Stacy is relatively new to the university and a new advisor. And we were talking about being the lead truck driver. And I was using a lot of jargon and lingo and talking about like gun to gun and, you know, like, and Stacy was like, wow, I have a lot to learn. So I think it's probably a lot of sweepstakes and buggy culture, but there's just something about really understanding the mechanics of the course and kind of how things work that feels like truck culture to me.
And I think beyond even just like the course itself, but also like the flow of race day, right? Like we're always like trying to keep our eyes on like, are they making a scheduling change? Are there going to be re-rolls? Are there, how long is the gun-to-gun time and things like that? And sometimes that changes because of weather or other reasons that we have to delay. And so I think part of truck culture is recognizing like we help make race day happen, but we don't make any of those decisions. And so we need to be super nimble, super, you know, ready to shift gears at a moment. You know, you back down the hill and you're expecting one thing and you're like, nope, this is actually different now. And we've got to pivot. And so I think part of truck culture is just being able to go with the flow and recognize that kind of we're serving at the leisure of sweepstakes. Right. And so, they never ask us what we think really about any of those things. we don't really want to, we're just there to make it happen. We don't have a dog in the fight and we don't really want to get involved in that stuff, but it all impacts us. So we have to be really aware of what's going on around us.
Yeah. And at the same time, I would say, I think it instills some confidence in the, you know, like the sweepstakes committee that, you know, from the safety chair to the head judge, you know, that we've been doing these roles for a while. And so, I mean, there's so many pieces and, you know, kind of the mechanics of race day that they have to attend to know that, like, we've been doing this for some time. We got this. You don't have to worry about the trucks, and we're here to support you in every way, I think is a relief to some degree to those chairs who, you know, turn over almost every year. And so, and have so much that they have to attend to, that, you know, they can lean on us and rely on us that way. And it's one less thing on the checklist that they have to kind of worry about, training new folks. So I think that's part of the kind of culture that we carry forward related to the trucks.
And I think too, even though the student leaders change every year, often the audience does not. So we're seeing the same alumni year to year. And now that there are a lot more of the showcases, we're seeing the house fellow heats and the advisor heats and the families who come back year over year because maybe their first child to come to CMU was involved in sweepstakes and now their second or third kids, or maybe the alums were involved and now those kids are here. So I think that the other piece of that is that we are consistent faces from year to year that folks recognize and they come up and we have conversations, or they've won the auction and, oh yeah, I remember you were in this heat last year. Now you've got this one. And so I think, you know, it goes back to what we were saying about being an ambassador, but I think that's one of the parts that I really enjoy is being able to kind of be part of that community year to year and see how it grows and evolves, while also maintaining some of that consistency that we're really proud of too.
I think something interesting with that consistency is it's like, obviously you all really get the gravity of the role and seem to really love it. And it seems it's kind of a role for life or as long as you want to take it. Do you ever feel like pressure from other staff? Like, hey, John, are you sure you want to keep doing that truck? Like, are people trying to take over, not necessarily take over, but like within the staff, is it recognized like what a cool gig this is?
Yes. I think there's a lot. Yeah. Sure. For sure. I think there are a lot of folks that would be very interested in the roles. I think there's like the year that I had a wedding that overlapped with Carnival and Joanna drove. I think there was a little bit of a coup about like who was going to get to co-pilot. And so I do. People will always ask, like, how did you get that role? And, you know, I know I was nervous whenever there's an advisor transition or there are things changing. I was nervous that we might get replaced, and it wasn't, would it remain? And a little bit every year we worry, like, we're in, right? Like, this is still happening and we still have our roles. So until we get the email that says, what size t-shirt do you want? I think we're always a little bit nervous that we might get, there might be a different plan. So yeah. I was thinking too, there's also, I was thinking of this story when you asked about other staff. So Patience Whitworth is in the provost unit and she's really into trucks. Like she just likes trucks. She drives a great truck and she likes trucks. And every year she'll ask me like, oh, what's your truck? And like, what's your package? I'm like, I don't know. I'm driving the blue one, you know? And she's like, no, I'm talking about like, what kind of truck is it? And what is the package? I'm not sure what that means, but like the finishes, I guess. Yeah. And she's always disappointed that I have no idea what she's talking about. And she'll be like, show me your keys. Like what I need to be able to see like the make and model and like what kind of truck you're actually driving. So I know the trucks are very cool and some people are actually really into the physical trucks. But for me, I'm always just worried about like, how hard is it to get in and out? And like, how big is the thing? Is there enough room in the back for everybody who needs to be in there? Those are the things I care about.
Sweet. Well, I think about wrapped up here. I guess I'll just kind of leave it open. Any final thoughts or comments or anything that come to mind you'd like to have on the record here?
I do think sometimes people are surprised to find that it's us. And Joanna kind of mentioned this, that it's us in the trucks, or that they know the people in the trucks. And when I say that, I mean, sometimes it's students and also sometimes it's other faculty and staff. The one year we had Jim Garrett when he was provost in the back of the truck, and he did a ride around. And then after he got out, he looked in the cab of the truck to say thanks for the ride. And he was like, oh my gosh, like Holly and Joanna, like, that was you? That's incredible. And then for a week, he kept saying, do you know that Holly drives that truck in sweepstakes? Like, so I think sometimes people are surprised to find that they know the folks or that it's not students. I'm not sure what they expect, but it's just a fun little piece of our resumes, I think, at Carnegie Mellon, that we get to be a part of this really amazing and cool tradition. So, yeah.
I'll offer, my mom has fallen in love with Buggy because of me driving the truck. And I will say shout out to the BAA because, this last year when I said, I called my mom the night before, race days, and I said, now mom, do you have the link to the, live stream? And she's like, of course I do. I've got that BAA website bookmarked on my Chrome browser, and so I know right how to get there. So I think that it's been a fun way to talk about the sweepstakes program with like family and friends. I think for all four of us, giving kind of the insider view of the whole program that it's equipped us with. So
yeah, my mom definitely watches, and I'll get texts on race day like, I see you. I see your truck.
very similar for me. It's a real honor to get to help with it. It's fun on race day morning when alums and other friends of the university are like texting because they're watching the live stream and they want, you know, they wherever they are, they still want to be a part of race day, which is super cool. No, it's just really fun. It's one of those things because Buggy is such like an intrinsic part of like the CMU student experience, whether you participate in it or just go as a spectator or just know friends who participate in it. Like, I feel it's really a pervasive part of most students' experience. But, you know, when you're faculty or staff, you kind of are positioned in a different part of the, you know, you're just oriented to the university in a different way. So to get to like play the game on race day feels like a cool way to get to be in the mix with the students. And that's really, really fun.
And I think for me, the only thing I'd add is that my kids and their friends follow the buggy races. And so if it's a day when they can be on campus, that's great. But otherwise, they are watching the live stream also. And I have a 15-year-old who is a pole vaulter who aspires to be king of the hill one day. Mm. So we'll see in a couple years if he is able to meet that goal. But I think that culture just extends outward, right? So it is a student-led tradition that I think has had all these ripple effects throughout the community and is not just confined to the Pittsburgh campus and the folks who can physically be there on race day. So I think it's truly this phenomena that really defines the CMU experience and the culture.
Yeah, I love being able to tell alums when, you know, you start to hear like, I'm coming back for my 20th or I'll be there for Carnival, and to just be able to say like, well, you know where you can find me Friday and Saturday. And we get that all day, people walking up to the trucks and saying like, hey, I knew I'd see you here. I knew I could find you here, which is, it's just awesome. Yeah.
I think that's a pretty good note to end on there.
That was a treat. Hope y'all had fun with this one. As always, give us feedback on the episode, cmubuggy.org/chat. Love to see your thoughts in there. Also, just love to see how fired up all the faculty were. You know, I think sometimes it's easy to get myopic about your team or whatever buggy involvement, but it really affects a lot of people, and that's cool. Another good one coming for you after this episode. We are going to be talking to Hill Royalty next week, the monarchs of the Hill, of their respective races from last year. Get a bit of a current, recent student perspective going into race day, and then Yeah, race day really coming up shortly. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you, as always, to Rachel Schmidt for producing and putting this all together, doing the hard work to make Shoot This Shit possible. And to you, the listeners, we'll catch you next week. I'm Will Weiner. Bye-bye.